are the Mystery History Podcast. I'm Allison.
I'm Rachel.
Welcome to episode 167 on Glenn Rogers, the cross country killer.
You know about this, bro?
No, I don't know about it, but I see a town I know close to us.
Yeah, it is. Yes, it is indeed. And we were alive.
During the whole time?
Well, not the whole time. He's older than us, but for part of the time.
Whoa.
I bet our parents probably like know about this, or at least somewhat remember it.
Yeah, maybe. We should ask them.
We should.
Huh.
Later.
Or if maybe anybody who's listening remembers it, tell us your tale.
Yeah, tell us all about it.
Yeah.
After we tell you all about it.
Right. Tell us what you remember. All right. Mm-hmm. So a few things before we get started, business-wise. Tee Public, where all of our cool new merch is located, is having an awesome sale today, which is Monday, the 27th, and Tuesday, the 28th. And it's the best deals ever made in the entire history of the world. Okay.
Did we post about this on Instagram?
No, we didn't.
We should do
but
that.
We will. So for today and tomorrow only, there are $15 classic tees, which are the best tees. And
they are
40% off everything that you could ever want.
Your freaking cat, dude.
Yeah, you might hear my cat. She's in heat. What are you going to do? It's annoying.
You're going to schedule an appointment to get her fixed because I can't keep living like this.
I can't think about it. I have to listen to this all night long. She climbs on top of my head and yells. It's awful. So my apologies.
I feel like she does this every time we record.
And she specifically comes over whenever I'm recording because I feel like she thinks I'm talking to her, and it's like, no, I'm not talking to you, get away from me.
You've got to go somewhere else, ma'am.
gotta go. Anyway, back to the deals. Yes, 40% off everything, $15 classic tees. But let's just say you don't get paid till Wednesday. It's like, oh man, the deals are gone. Well, not quite, my friend.
They're not
as great, but still pretty fabulous. On Wednesday, and I think probably till the end of the week, they have $16 tees and 35% off everything. So that's still pretty freaking good.
That's like just as good.
Like $1 more.
It's like a dollar difference. Like we can handle that.
Yeah. So that's super exciting. Jamie has put some really awesome graphics together for t-shirts. You can get some OG logos too. But yes, please go get you something real nice for a deal. Mm-hmm. And you know, I love coupons.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you do, and
Christmas
getting
gifts for the family.
Yeah. Oh my God. Wouldn't that be the cutest thing you've ever seen?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should do that.
We should do that. Like a Christmas card. Yep. What?
That's it's a great happening. Idea. Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah. That's good. That's good. Yeah. Okay. So maybe we'll have a Christmas card to give out. And if you wanted a Christmas card that we haven't made yet, but probably will, you can join our Patreon for $2 or $5. And we'll mail you a freaking Christmas card, apparently. And a sticker.
And it may or may not have pictures of us in our shirts. Hard to say.
Right. It could. It will be a shirt of ours.
Yeah.
Whether it be just one that's out of the closet or one from Tee Public, who's to say? But we'll be wearing shirts.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yes, yeah. if you want a Christmas card, get at us on Patreon, $2 or $5. That is a deal if I've ever heard one. And you get a sticker and a love note.
And a ton of episodes.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, I think we're at 155-ish, yeah. I want to say.
I think so.
Yeah, you can go to patreon.com/mysteryhistorypodcast and sign up. That would be like the best Christmas gift for us. I'll tell you that.
It really would.
Speaking of Christmas, we are going to be taking a break Christmas Day and New Year's Day, which are both, Monday full episodes. We still will be releasing Patreon episodes. They might be a day or two late, but we will be releasing them. So another reason to join Patreon. We don't stop.
Mm-hmm.
Except for last week.
Shh. Hush.
But I will be releasing a bonus episode. I was in Pennsylvania with my family, and my cousin does our top five podcast. So go give them a like and a listen. They have a group of people. It changes time to time, and they pick a topic. And we did top five cover songs of all time and top five 90s movies, which I was all about both of those.
Mm-hmm. So your list was wrong for the 90s movies, but it's okay.
I disagree with you, and I'll die on that hill every day.
No, can't be right all the time, and it's okay.
Well, we're going to post them on Patreon, and then you can be the judge.
Well, rude, I wasn't even invited.
No, you weren't, because you were in Pennsylvania.
No, I was not. But
in the last order of business is episode suggestions. You guys have been like rock solid Stone Cold Killers sending us episode suggestions, and we love it. Love it.
Yes, we do.
We are we have a bunch of episode suggestions included in our roster so far. We are currently scheduling in January right now. So if there's something that strikes your fancy that you're like, I want to hear these broads talk about this, send it to us and we will add it to our list.
Yes, we will.
All right. I think that's okay. It. Mm-hmm. Is that all the self-promotion?
I think that's about all
I can stand.
Me too. Let's get on with it.
Let's get on with it.
All right, I'm going to tell you about Glenn Edward Rogers. This guy was born July 15th, 1962. He was born and raised in Hamilton, Ohio, which is just a little baby drive from where we live. So very close, near Cincinnati, Ohio.
I get my hair done in Hamilton.
Yeah, I mean, it's close enough to go get your hair done.
Yes.
You sometimes go get your hair done in Hamilton. Oh, but not your haircuts. Okay.
Not my haircuts. My haircuts colors I should only. Go get in Hamilton.
It's not in Hamilton.
Yeah.
Well, he was one of seven children born to Edna and Claude Rogers. Edna was raised very much in the Pentecostal church, so she was very active, went to church like 3 to 4 times a week. Claude was born in Kentucky and was a moonshiner.
Wow.
Yeah. And Claude and Edna, they got married and he stopped Edna from going to church. And she was scared of Claude.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, this is a bit like Romeo and Juliet, only cooler. But now you just sunk my theory. This is not good.
It's definitely not cooler.
Okay.
Claude would beat her and he would beat the kids. And the kids would all hide upstairs while he would beat her. It was just a bad situation. Back then you had to go see a judge to get your tubes tied.
What?
Yeah. Isn't that weird? I feel like I've heard that before, but yeah, you had to go see a judge if you wanted to get your tubes tied. And Claude and Edna went before a judge after they had already had 5 kids together. And the judge denied Edna being able to get her tubes tied because there was no medical reason. Her life was not in danger. So they said, no, you cannot get your tubes tied. Yeah.
Oh my God. This is why it's so important.
Women's rights. Women's rights.
Very important.
Yeah. Well, and even more to add a point to that, Glenn was the next child they had after being denied having their tubes tied. So if Edna would have been allowed to have her tubes tied, none of this shit would have happened.
So this judge is responsible for, I'm assuming, many deaths.
Yeah.
Wowzers.
I wonder if he can sleep at night. He probably doesn't even know. I'm sure he's dead. But also, I bet that person never even knew that. Like, never even realized that they could have stopped this all from happening.
Man,
if they would have just believed in women's rights.
If I was Edna, I would have wrote a letter and I would have been like, listen, sir, judge, look what you did.
Yeah, you could have kept all of this from happening. Well, Claude he was a hydro pulp operator. He had multiple jobs, but he lost his job. And that resulted in everybody being hungry, there being no money, and the kids would turn to stealing and committing crimes to get food, to get money. That was just how they lived.
Oh, man, that's awful.
Mm-hmm.
So good old Glenn, he was expelled from his junior high school before he was 16. He was then sent to reform school and was in and out of the Ohio juvenile system. Not a great start.
Mm-mm.
He was molested by guards, which is awful.
Mm-hmm.
Sometime after his expulsion, his ex-girlfriend, a 14-year-old named Deborah Ann Nix, got pregnant by another man.
They weren't together when she got pregnant.
Okay. So Glenn heard about her being stuck at the hospital with her newborn baby because she didn't have an address. So the hospital wouldn't release her to go anywhere, mm-hmm. which that's kind of crazy, too.
I know. It's like the times, man. These things like happened. I had no idea that that was a thing. Like they had to provide an address and she didn't have a place to go. So they wouldn't let her leave with the baby.
I just feel like I would be like, I'm out of here. Like, I'm checking myself
She's
out.
Also 14.
That's true. But
so
still.
I wonder if that had something to do with it. Probably.
But what are they
She's
gonna
a
do?
Minor. Take her baby.
Oh, man. You just blew my mind.
I mean, I'm assuming that's where that was going.
Man, I'd steal my baby and get out of Dodge. But I mean, mm-hmm. maybe it wasn't bad because at least you have a place to stay. And I don't know. Anyway, Glenn heard about this and he went up there and he got her and the baby out. So he loved Debbie and the baby and adopted the baby, but he was jealous and he didn't trust her, probably because this child was not his.
Well, they weren't together, so no, it's just that he was a jealous kind of person and didn't trust women. So, yeah, I just in general didn't. So I think the way that it sounds is that he loved her. He wanted to have this family. He wanted to take care of her, but there was something wrong in his cuckoo brain and he couldn't maintain having a family.
Wow.
Because of his jealousy and his inability to just be chill. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The young couple married and then they had another child in 1981. Glenn was so controlling and he would beat her. He put her in the hospital. And in 1983, Deborah filed for divorce, alleging physical abuse. In fear of being arrested, Glenn just took off to California. He met another woman and had another baby, but they split up too, probably for the same reasons that you said above. He's just not mm-hmm. normal.
Yeah. And it's like he was trying to have a family, but he just, I mean, no.
Couldn't let it go.
No, he could not. So after that, he traveled around the country committing crimes, just getting into trouble, stealing things that he wanted. Just going from place to place, not getting caught because he was just committing crimes and moving on. And he ended up back in Hamilton at one point. And when he was in Hamilton, he robbed a convenience store down the street from his sister's house with a steak knife.
Wow.
He was in the newspaper. Like, there was a picture of him. Not a picture of him. It was a drawing of him. They were looking for him.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know it was him. But, right. You know, they're like, this guy. And he got the money from this place and gave it to his sister to save her house because she was being evicted. So that's why he went and robbed it. I know, right?
It's kind of like a twisted Robin Hood.
He's real messed up. But yeah, like, I don't know. He had no trouble committing acts of violence if they served him. His brother said that if the people that he tried to rob with that steak knife hadn't given him the money, he probably would have killed them. Like, he would have hurt them. At some point, Glenn approached the narcotics unit in Hamilton, and he started working undercover for them. AKA, he was a snitch. He was a drug user. The cops were familiar with him because of all the crimes he committed, but he became a snitch for them. He was described as being a smooth talker and a drug user. And by being undercover, he was taught certain things that likely kept him out of trouble later. So he had relationships with these officers and learned things. And from being a smooth talker, he just learned the way things worked. And that benefited him later by getting out, like making him able to get out of things, basically.
Wow.
It also, though, resulted in him thinking that he could pretty much get away with anything.
Right. Wow. What a way, like, just
to live.
All this stuff just culminated into him being the way that he is. And I'm sure the things that will happen.
Oh,
okay.
Oh, hold on. There. I wanted to take out a sentence before you said it.
Okay. Let's talk about the murders.
Let's.
In 1992, Glenn told his brother that he had killed about 50 people. So, like, just having a drink with your bro. Yeah, you know, I killed 50 people.
Mm-hmm.
But his brother didn't believe him because that's a pretty high number, right?
Yeah, you're, like, not going to believe that. From most people.
I mean, I would believe it more if my brother was like, hey, I killed a guy. I'm like, holy shit. What?
Yeah. But if you come like, in, like, I killed. Yeah. Like, really?
Shut up. You did not. Anyway, they went on a road trip together and they were committing burglaries. And one night after Clay, his brother, passed out, Glenn came back late, covered in blood. Now his brother's probably like, well, maybe
he does. Yeah.
At one point after the road trip, Clay started working a regular 9-to-5 job. And one night, Glenn showed up with a body in his trunk.
So, Clay saw the body.
Yeah. So now he's like, okay, he definitely killed 50 people. Now it's like 52 people.
Yeah.
Clay, he didn't know what to do. But did say that wasn't the first time Glenn had shown up saying he needed help getting rid of a body.
But that was, I think, the first time that he actually saw a body. Yeah. And every other time he just told him to, like, get out of here.
Right. He always said no. But he also didn't call the police right away. I mean, wow.
Now, keep in mind, like, this family, like, his brother was a criminal, too. Like, Clay was also a criminal, but he didn't kill people.
Right.
So, I don't know. The moral compass on this thing is not, you know, the same as maybe you or I.
I mean, I feel like his moral compass is really strong when it comes to family, like, helping his sister by robbing people and, like, I do feel like there is some maybe good in there. It's just like not.
Well, and I'm talking about his brother, though. His brother not like ratting him out right away, or I don't know. I feel like it's difficult when it's family, I'm sure, but it's not that difficult. And if I see a dead body, I'm definitely calling the cops.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, 100%. So I don't know. On January 10th, 1994, police recovered the remains of 71-year-old Mark Peters from Hamilton, Ohio. He was a retired electrician and a veteran, and they found him in a cabin that belonged to the family of Glenn Rogers in Beattyville, Kentucky. Now, this was not a nice cabin. This was like a rundown shanty house. Yes. Mark was a friend of Glenn Rogers' mother's and had taken Glenn Rogers in and allowed him to live in his home in October 1993.
Oh, no.
Mark Peters was reported missing along with his car and several valuable personal items, including antiques, guns, and a collection of coins. Glenn had also disappeared, and reportedly his brother Clay led police to search the family cabin for clues leading to the discovery of Mark's skeleton, which was found bound to a chair and covered by a pile of furniture.
Wow.
Clay said that he had found Mark in that cabin because Clay had gotten out of jail after being in jail for 6 months or something. And he went out to the cabin. I don't know if he went out there to like hide out or like lay low for a while or what the situation was, but he gets there and instead of being able to chill, he's faced with a body.
Damn it, Glenn.
Yeah. And he didn't, he spent a few days again, he left and he did not call the cops right away, but eventually he did. And Clay said that that was the first time in his life that he felt that he was doing something so right that he felt good inside about it.
Oh, wow.
How sad is that?
That is sad.
And he's like a grown man at this point, like super grown. He's older than Glenn and they were born in the 60s and this is in the 90s. So, right. You know, he's an adult at this point. Mm-hmm. He said that he realized he was turning in a serial killer, not his brother.
Yeah.
Like this guy wasn't his brother anymore.
Wow. So Glenn had run out to California and allegedly was spending time with Nicole Brown Simpson.
Yeah. What? Catch this. Catch this. Uh-huh.
The 2012 documentary, My Brother, the Serial Killer, included claims that Glenn... What killed Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman in 1994? No, I already made up my mind about this. Whenever we did the OJ episode.
Yeah.
According to Glenn's brother, Clay, Glenn claimed that before the murders, he had met Nicole and was going to take her down, in quotes. During a lengthy correspondence that began in 2009 between Glenn and criminal profiler Anthony Miolis, Glenn wrote and created paintings about his involvement with the murders. During a prison meeting between the two, Glenn claimed O.J. Simpson hired him to break into Nicole Brown Simpson's house and steal some expensive jewelry, and that Simpson had told him, quote, you may have to kill the bitch. Okay, I kind of believe this.
I know, right?
And
it was like before she was dead, like before anything happened, Glenn was supposedly calling his siblings and like saying, I'm hanging out with this rich white lady, Nicole Brown Simpson. Like they didn't know who she was.
Right.
But he like was talking about her before she died.
Oh, God. This just ruined my whole life. Okay. In a filmed interview, Glenn's brother Clay asserts that his brother confessed his involvement. Glenn's family stated that he had informed them that he had been working for Nicole in 1994 and that he had made verbal threats about her to them. Glenn later spoke to a criminal profiler about the Goldman-Simpson murder, providing details about the crime and remarking that he had been hired by O.J. Simpson to steal a pair of earrings and potentially murder Nicole. Either way, OJ's a piece of shit.
Oh, yeah.
But still.
No matter what. No matter what. So whether that occurred or not, right after Nicole was murdered, Glenn was laying low in Los Angeles, California. On September 28th, 1995, Sandra Gallagher, a 33-year-old mother of three, crossed paths with Glenn at McRed's Bar in Van Nuys, California. Sandra had won a lottery ticket for $1,200 and she was out celebrating.
Good for you.
Her win.
Girl. Yeah.
You would hope so. Good for her, but meh. Mm. She gave Glenn a ride home that night from the bar after she had been introduced to him by a mutual friend. And the next day, Sandra's strangled, badly burned corpse was found in her car near Glenn's Van Nuys apartment. So the vehicle had been set on fire.
Well, and I'm sure she thought she was safe if he was introduced by a mutual friend.
Mm-hmm.
Man.
Gotta be careful out there, folks.
Man.
Well, and she had money.
Yeah.
From this lottery ticket. Like, that's probably, yeah. After identifying Sandra, authorities tracked her movements back to the bar and started searching for Glenn to question him. And authorities allege that after he murdered Sandra, he moved on to Mississippi.
Mm. He's just all over the place, too.
He is all over the place.
In Jackson, Mississippi, Glenn met Linda Price. Kathy Carroll, Linda's sister, said Linda had met Glenn at a beer tent at the Mississippi State Fair. Her sister repeatedly said, "Ain't he good looking?"
No.
Probably not. Glenn and Linda got an apartment together 3 days later and lived together briefly. So, like, he was, must have been damn fine.
They moved very quickly in together.
Wow. Well, of course he has to do that because after 3 days, people are like, this guy is nuts. He's nuts. She is a very small window of time. The last time Kathy saw her sister was the night before Halloween in 1995 in a bar with Glenn, who had left the bar in a bad way.
So I didn't write notes in this about this, but I'm going to say what happened was that her sister and she were at the bar and Glenn was there too. And the two sisters went to the bathroom and Linda told Kathy that if something happens to her, don't let him get away with it.
Oh God.
And her sister was like, what are you talking about? And then he started banging on the bathroom door and basically like pulled her out of the bar and they left.
Oh no. That's not good.
Mm-hmm.
The two planned to have Kathy's grandchildren go trick-or-treating at Linda's apartment. However, Linda did not answer her door the next day and Glenn was gone. Similar to the other killings, Linda and Glenn met over drinks. Linda was in her 30s and had red hair.
Like his mother.
Oh, really?
She had red hair. Yeah. Oh.
She was found dead in a bathtub with stab wounds to her chest, her butt, and her throat cut from ear to ear. And a washcloth over her face. So pretty freaking brutal.
Yeah, very gruesome.
Not just, I feel like, to kill her. It was to, like, that was aggression.
Yeah, he's aggressive. At that point, Glenn took off for Louisiana.
Man.
And there he met Andy Sutton and her friend Teresa in Bossier City, once again in a bar. Andy told her friend Teresa that she loved Glenn after a very short time. And Teresa said that was very strange for Andy because she thought guys were like a dime a dozen, wasn't a quick to fall in love person, but said that she loved him. Mm. The two women dropped Glenn off at a bus station and he was headed to Tampa, Florida. He said he was going there for a car. So they made it through that night.
Right. Dodged a freaking bullet.
For a minute.
Oh, God.
On November 5th, 1995, Tina Marie Cribbs was seen leaving the Showtown Bar in Gibsonton, Florida with Glenn. A bartender told police that Glenn had bought Tina and her friends drinks and that Glenn later asked Tina for a ride. 2 days later, a member of the cleaning staff at the Tampa 8 Inn discovered Tina's body in a bathtub. Like Linda in Mississippi, she had been stabbed in the chest and in the butt. A clerk at the motel told authorities that Glenn had arrived at the motel a few days before the murder. And I want to say that his brother in this documentary I was watching very creepily was talking about how murdering people in the bathtub of a hotel is like a clean getaway type situation. You can stab them and let them bleed out in the bathtub and then just take their bodies and leave, and there's not evidence because they were in the bathtub, all the blood washes right down the drain, and you just take the body and go.
His brother
said Clay? That yes, Clay.
You know,
it was real. It was weird. I'm just going to say it was strange to hear him say that. And I was like, that's just something you think about. Yeah. Like, very strange. And it was weird hearing him say it the way he said it. But I'm assuming that's what Glenn was thinking here, but ended up leaving her there. I don't really know what the situation was with that. But one of the workers found her. On November 5th, Glenn paid for an extra night and asked that his room not be cleaned. So he was staging it. The clerks.
Hold on. I have something to say.
Yeah.
I was a housekeeper for a brief amount of time.
Yeah.
And that was like my number one fear, especially like, I don't know. There's just, you get vibes and you don't know what people are doing in those hotel rooms. And then you got to go in there and clean up after them. I feel like I needed a UV light all the time because I feel like there's blood and semen everywhere.
There probably is. What's the worst thing you ever found?
We found a bunch of, it wasn't pot, but it was like, you could see that they were doing like a full operation. Like there was so much contraband, I will say, everywhere that they left, like wrappers, the whole room smelled like pot. It wasn't like, oh, I'm smoking a little weed. It was like, I'm selling this stuff on 7570 interchange. Like,
yeah,
we called the cops and they didn't do anything about it. I also, so
were
that
they
was
still
crazy.
Staying there?
No, it was after they checked out. And it's like, well, we have their credit card information, their driver's license. Like, you're still telling me that you can't do anything with this? I just feel like they didn't want to mess with it. But
that's because it was just pot. It was just pot.
But that was like 15 years ago. And it wasn't just like pot. It was like, it looked like they had loads of it, like trunk full of pots to distribute. And that's a bad drug trafficking area.
It is. And yeah.
Pot's not bad, but the things that come with it could be bad, like
and
human
distributing
or
you're not allowed to distribute it. Yeah.
And I feel like weed is something that can get sprinkled on things. They could have had pills and stuff too. I don't know, you know, like who knows what they had, but then also people don't like men wouldn't hold themselves whenever they would pee and they would just pee all over the bathroom.
Ew.
I only did that job for like 6 months. I was doing it so I could get a front desk job, which is where I need to stay in life, is the front desk.
Yeah.
But people are disgusting. And now like I try to leave tips for the housekeepers. I never thought of that before. I always try to pick up all my stuff to make sure they don't have to do it. Like I try to be very respectful because that sucks. That job sucks.
Yeah, that is a rough job. So the clerk saw Glenn putting his belongings into a white Ford Festiva. The next day, Tina's wallet was discovered at a rest area in North Florida. The fingerprints lifted from her wallet and the motel room matched Glenn's fingerprints. So they've got him nailed down in Florida for this murder if they can catch him.
Wow.
And that was November 5th, 1995.
Okay. Let's see here. November 9th, 1995. Andy Giles Sutton's body was found by Teresa stabbed to death on a punctured waterbed in her apartment in Bossier City, Louisiana.
So they didn't dodge that bullet for very long.
No. In a waterbed. Man.
Hmm.
Teresa told authorities that Glenn had been at the apartment, and when they put him in the system, he came back with a hit.
Because people were looking.
Yeah, all over the place, probably.
Yep.
He was being searched by many different jurisdictions. The manhunt for Glenn was on. They reached out to Edna, Glenn's mom, to go on the television and ask him to turn himself in. Glenn was calling the family and started to threaten to kill them. Because why not at this point?
Right.
Edna thought Glenn was coming back to kill her and her boyfriend, which I would be afraid too. An interesting point made in the documentary is, why would he want to kill his own mother? Well, she was the one abused by his father. She was a victim. And it turns out pretty often that the anger and aggression is directed not at the abuser, but at the one that should have protected them as a child. And they said Glenn was killing his mother over and over in the women that he chose to kill, obviously by the red hair and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
So he was just really pissed.
Yes, he was. On November 13th, Glenn was spotted close to the family cabin in Kentucky. He was supposedly headed back to Hamilton, according to his brother. And his brother Clay said some real effed up stuff about this. So strap in.
God.
He talked about how he and his brother like invited demons into themselves by chanting and like doing weird stuff like before. And his brother had it, and like Glenn had it in his head, according to Clay, that he was coming back for Clay to kill him so that the demon would leave Glenn and go to Clay, and Glenn could like go to heaven or something. I don't know. Go to the afterlife without this demon, basically.
Holy cow.
It's like weird.
So
the wait. Things.
So Glenn was willingly going to the cabin so that Clay could murder him to release the demon.
Yeah.
And then move on to the afterlife.
Yeah. And the demon would go into Clay if Clay killed him.
And was then who was going to kill Clay?
I don't know. Girl, I don't know what the idea was there. I don't think it was all the way thought through. But Clay talked mm-hmm. about that in the documentary. Highly recommend this documentary. It is weird AF. So
tell me about Clay. Like, what's that demeanor look like?
He definitely seems like an ex-convict, but there's something likable about this guy. I don't know what it is. I find something I like about in him. He's just, I don't know. But his brother, like Glenn, watching him, like they have video of when he was arrested and he looks effing terrifying. Like there's one point where they're trying to push him down into the police car and his neck and his head is just like not moving, and his face, it's like scary. You just have to see it.
Well, this picture that you have, the blonde guy, assuming is Glenn.
Yep. And that's like when they were pushing his head down. Like that is right before they try to push his head down into the car. You see that guy's hand? Pretty sure that's the hand that's going to try to push his head down. And he's mm-hmm. just like, it's like not moving. Like,
what's the demon? Obviously.
Yeah.
He's got some Matthew McConaughey vibes. Do you see it?
A little bit.
Whenever he plays like white trash folk. It's like,
yeah, totally, I see it a little bit. Like
in Dazed and Confused a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, it'd be cool if you did. You know, I could see him saying that.
Yeah. This guy's creepy. He scares me a lot more than Matthew McConaughey does.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Glenn was arrested in Waco, Kentucky after a 13-mile chase on November 13th, 1995. Kentucky State Police Detective Bob Stevens noticed Tina's stolen car. He chased him with Glenn drinking beer and then just chucking the cans out onto the detective's hood. So he was going out with a bang. I mean, yeah. What else would you do? You might as well.
Yeah, you're caught.
He's not going to get a DUI at this point. I mean, maybe he did, but who cares?
It's not going to matter. Yeah, may as well.
He's not going to be driving for a while. Either way, he was followed by rookie Irvine, Kentucky police officer Charles Cox. Whilst this was taking place, Trooper Ed Robinson and other officers set up a roadblock to stop Glenn. Robinson fired a shotgun blast that hit the rear tires, but it didn't stop him. Then Robinson joined the pursuit. Sergeant Joey Barnes, who formerly served with the Florida Highway Patrol, rammed his patrol car into Tina's stolen car and spun him off the highway into a ditch. Glenn got the little Ford Festiva up to 100 miles per hour in the chase.
Which and might not seem like very fast, but if you see this car, it's like a little baby. Yeah, it's like a little baby clown car. So that's pretty fast for that car, I'm pretty sure.
You've had the pedal down to the flow.
Yeah.
Stevens, Cox, Robinson, Barnes, and other officers surrounded Glenn and had him and arrested him. A local TV news crew filmed Glenn's chase and arrest on the scene. And like Rachel said, he looks terrifying and also a little bit like Matthew McConaughey. So this is okay. Wait a second here. Wait a second. Hmm. So we talked about OJ. And OJ had the car chase.
Yeah.
Was he trying to like be like OJ?
I don't know. I don't know what was going on with that. I don't think that was planned that way.
And
probably, but
I think that we need to try to find a place that will let us drive cop cars and do road maneuvers like that, like how to ram a vehicle.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was watching some show the other day, and it was showing somebody how I think they were. Who are those people that protect the president? Secret Service.
Oh, like Secret Service. Yeah.
And how you can go backwards and then how to like spin the car around and go forward.
I want to know how to do that.
I feel like that's important.
I feel like that would just be fun.
I mean, I haven't had to use that yet, but
that's because you don't know how. You might have used it if you knew how.
We should look that up. That would be so fun.
That can't be good for your car.
I mean, I'm not going to use my car. I'm going to use somebody else's car. That would be an expensive like class. I feel like.
Agreed.
What kind of insurance do you need for that? Because I probably don't have the acceptable amount.
Probably not. So Glenn was a suspect in a lot of cold cases, and they found all of these murders that matched his MO all over the place. Because you know when they find guys like this, they start like everywhere starts looking at their cold cases. Mm-hmm. And this bro has been all over the country. He has been everywhere.
Wow.
So they don't know all the places he stopped and stayed over the 15 years that he was running around. Mm-hmm. So they, you know, are looking at all these cold cases, found all this stuff that matches him. They can't pin him with it, you know, but
yeah, it's probably
it looks
him.
real suspicious. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they went and searched the family cabin after they got him, and they found remnants of two other bodies in fire pits, but they couldn't identify them. And there's no, yes. And there's people in Hamilton that he very likely killed.
That's so close, man.
I know.
That could have been any one of our loved ones.
I know. And that's why I'm like, I wonder how big this was in the 90s. Like, I'm assuming our parents probably remember this. It's so close to home. I feel like they would, but I don't remember it.
Well, and even still, like, even if he got arrested in California or something like that, I feel like maybe the presence wouldn't be as like
big. Yeah.
Big here, but it was in Kentucky, which is just right across the
right
river.
Right over the river. Yeah. It was close, very close to where he's Whoa. From. So, what was I going to say? Oh, Florida got to try Glenn first in Tampa because they had the most solid case and they knew that they could nail him. And also, Florida has a pretty big death penalty situation going on. They like to kill people.
Yeah.
Or at least they did. I don't know if they still do. But in the 90s, they definitely did.
On July 11th, 1997, Glenn Rogers was convicted and sentenced to death for the murder of Tina Marie Cribbs. On June 22nd, 1999, Rogers was convicted of murdering Sandra Gallagher. And on July 16th, 1999, California sentenced him to death. So he ain't going nowhere.
He is going absolutely nowhere.
Glenn was scheduled to be executed on Valentine's Day, which is very poetic, in 1999 in Florida. Still, he immediately appealed to the Florida Supreme Court, claiming that the state had not presented enough evidence to support the charges. Seriously?
Yeah.
Glenn also argued that the trial court should have granted the defense's motion for a mistrial because a witness was allowed to testify about a misdemeanor for which Glenn was convicted in California.
Which, who cares?
Who cares? Buddy. He also claimed the prosecution was allowed to present an improper argument during closing arguments. What does that even mean?
I don't know. What they said was not kosher, I suppose. However, it was probably true.
Right.
Yeah. And he was maintaining, like, they have all this evidence. I mean, this guy's crazy, but he was saying he was innocent. Like, you know,
a lot of people do that.
Right. I know. But still, like, he definitely did it.
Yeah.
His appeal was delayed until March 2001 and was ultimately denied. In April 2005, Glenn filed another appeal. It was denied in 2011. It was his last appeal. I don't think he's dead, though.
Good Lord, that's 6 years.
Yeah, he's been allowed to just, like, live his life in prison.
Yeah. Wow.
So he got the death penalty, and I saw there was an article from one of the people's moms. Hold on, let me think about who it was. It was in 2019, so he was still alive in 2019 for sure. I'm 99% sure he's alive right now. I don't know why I didn't check that. Yeah, he's still alive.
Yeah, he's still alive.
Yep. What? And in 2019, there was like an article out with one of the moms saying that like there's no reason why he should still be alive and they need to kill him, like,
yeah,
put him down. So yeah, he's still around. He is also known as the Casanova killer. So that Valentine's Day thing is very appropriate. Too bad they didn't actually kill him on that day.
Right.
And then there is a film, a 2019 film, The Murder of Nicole Brown Simpson, purports to tell the story, as asserted by Glenn and his family, about his involvement with Nicole Brown Simpson. Glenn is portrayed by Nick Stahl, and Mina Suvari portrays Nicole Brown Simpson. I don't know if that's like a made-for-TV movie, probably.
Yeah, Mina hasn't been in anything big since like American Pie, I feel like.
Yeah, agreed. But
wow.
Wait. I don't even think Mina Suvari. Oh, wait, it is her. Weird. The picture of her on the like box of the movie looks nothing like her. I'm wondering if that's someone else, but I don't think it can be. Like, it looks nothing like her. Do you see that?
I'm trying to find it. What's it called?
You can follow the link out of the notes. That's not her face.
Oh no, that's not her, is it? No,
but who else would be on the cover? She plays Nicole Brown Simpson.
I love Nick Stahl. He was in The Faculty.
Oh yeah, I don't know if I would say I love him. He creeps me out.
I like him, and like, I mean, he's good. Kind of way.
Yeah, he's good. I've seen him in multiple. Hold on, Nick Stahl.
He looks different.
He's also in that other movie about...
Not The Faculty. Disturbing Behavior is what I meant.
Oh. Wait.
Is her, man. That is her.
Yeah. That does not look anything like her, does it?
No. It's like she got a fatter face or something.
That is so weird.
She does look like Nicole Brown Simpson.
Wow. Yeah. Very strange. Very strange indeed. I feel like this is the same guy that is in another movie about the kids. We've done an episode on it about the kids that kill the guy, and it's him.
Wow, that's every episode we've ever done.
You're right. You're right. You're right. I don't know what it's called right now. Whatever.
Bully?
It doesn't matter.
Bully?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Is that him?
Yeah.
Yes, it is. So he's Bobby Kent. Yes, Bobby Kent. Exactly. Interesting that he's in two movies as the bad guy, because even though he dies in Bully, he's the bad guy. Interesting. Huh. Indeed. So anyways, go check that out if you want to. And then I highly recommend the documentary I watched before this, which is My Brother, the Serial Killer. And I used a lot of information from that. And it's just really interesting because they interview, it's like his family has lots of, like, they're the ones that are like running the show on this documentary. So it's really interesting to see all of those interviews. And then they interview Teresa, the friend of Andy.
Oh,
and
yeah.
She talks about like finding Andy. It's really heartbreaking. Like, it's so sad. But yeah, I don't know.
I would like to watch that. I want to see this Clay character. Mm-hmm.
You've got to see him. I want to do more research on him before I really form an opinion about him, but there's just something about him I just like him. Let's but see. He's definitely has done some bad shit in his life, you can tell.
Let's see.
But it sounds like he lives by a moral code of he at least doesn't hurt people.
Yeah.
He said we don't hurt people. So I don't know. But then I also used Wikipedia. So that's my sources.
Yeah. Well, and that the Murder of Nicole Brown Simpson movie, that's available mm-hmm. to watch on Roku and Amazon for free.
Ooh, nice.
Which is my favorite.
Price.
It's got a 2 out of 5, which, I mean,
not great.
It appears great from the cover.
2 out of 5-ish. Yeah. Mina Suvari doesn't even look like herself. So,
no.
Very wow. strange.
Wow, wow, wow. Okay. Fine. What a tale. All right. Well, we hope you enjoyed episode 167 on Glenn Rogers, the cross country killer. We hope that you guys have a great week, and we will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.